You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good evening and welcome. It's not the Fatback Four. We just threw it in as a Fatback Four special tonight. I'm the host, Keith, and we're going to be looking back at the first round of matches in the Euros. Joining me tonight, I've got Chris. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate.
I'm relying on your knowledge of all things Euros because, you know, I'm more of a Captain America man, but I've seen my fair share of games and we have plenty of stuff to talk about, plenty of highlights, couple of lowlights and plenty in between. So looking forward.
I'm all over North Macedonia, mate. Don't worry.
Aren't we all? Gordon Pandev fan club. The youngest ever scorer at a major tournament, which is nice for them.
And also the oldest, which is quite a feat.
37 years old. Good lad, good lad. I'm also joined by Gar Breen. Gar, how are you?
How are you, Keith? How are you, Chris? How are you, Connor? How are you, lads?
All good, pal. All good. Again, we're going to look forward to some of these matches and just get your takes on, you know, what you've enjoyed and maybe what you haven't enjoyed. And as a football man, Gar, I'm expecting great things from you.
We'll get on to that.
And we're delighted to be joined by Connor for the fourth time tonight. Connor, give us a second name there for the people because we can't pronounce it.
It's a McCloggerty.
McCloggerty. That's what I would have gone with, but you know, you can never tell. I would have gone McCloggerty, but some might have said McCloggerty, so I said I'd leave it up to you.
It depends. There's a lot of variation.
Yeah, exactly. We'll go with straight from the horse's mouth. Connor's first time joining us. It won't be his last, so it's great to have you on board.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Good stuff. And just for the listeners, so they know, three of us on this panel are Liverpool fans. And one is a Chelsea fan, so we'll leave you to guess who that one is.
Hands up. Yep.
As we're going on. So be kind, be gentle. Chelsea don't tend to get too much stick in our chat, so you're all right.
Great to have a bit of variation too, isn't it?
But it is. It's great to have a different voice, you know what I mean? Because, look, I'll be honest, lads, when I look at major tournaments, I look really for Liverpool players and certain players who I enjoy watching, but mainly I'm looking, how are the Liverpool lads doing? So it'll be good to get the different view from the Chelsea side. So, as we said, we're going to do a Euros roundup of the fourth round of matches. And, Chris, I'll start with you. The build-up to the tournament, how have you found it? Because we all know it's different. It's not a standard, you know, European championships. It was never going to be because the plan was always to do it over different cities and not host it in one place. And then COVID started to really put a blow to that. How are you? What were you thinking was going to happen in the build up? Were you looking forward to it or was there a sort of trepidation to it?
I think in the build up, I was a bit flat towards it. I'm not one for international friendlies and qualifiers, but I quite enjoy tournament football. But I tend to like it when it's in one country. So you just you pick up things that, I mean, people didn't like the Vuvuzelas in South America, but it was something different. You know, Russia World Cup was good. So I like that. I wasn't a big fan when they said, we're going to spread across all these countries. And they said, it's to help the fans out and it's to stop ticket price going up. I thought, yeah, you tell Wales fans flying to Baku for two games and then going to Italy for one, you're taking them. But so I was a bit nonplussed. I think the thing that helped was I took the Turkey. The second half of the Turkey-Italy game was good, and it was a very different style. I've seen Italy play. I mean, I've seen Italy play a lot of international football. It is very defensive, look for a 1-0 win, and it was quite a different style. So actually, that made me sit up and went, well, this is something a bit different. I think the fact we've got crowds, and I mean, it was, I only saw cut the end of the Hungary-Portugal game, but that had a full stadium. And it, do you know, it looked mad going, you know, all those people in one stadium, because it's what, a year since we've seen that. So it did look a bit odd. So the roar when Portugal scored, you're thinking like, you did have a thought going, it's a while since I've seen something like that. And actually that sort of G'd it up a bit more for me. So it sort of also give you a little bit of idea of what next season could be, hopefully, with a crowd back. So it's been quite a nice welcome distraction. And I would say, and it's amazing how many pundits have caught on to this now, is it's amazing how well VAR works when it's used properly.
Yeah.
And to be fair, it's been used in every game. And when it's been brought in, you've gone, oh, yeah, that looks off, or, oh, yeah, I can see why that's disallowed. And you don't kick off because it's not fussy. It's just, in now and again, you don't see 15 replays, you don't see the lines and all that sort of crap. You just, it's probably like a minute delay and they go, that's offside. And you see one replay and you go, oh, yeah, fair enough. So it's a bit more common sense used with the VAR, but, you know, that's England all over. We do our own thing and it's always wrong.
Indeed. Connor, I'll come to you. The VAR thing, I've been getting texts today and some people ask me, is there no VAR at this tournament within the Portugal game? And it's been different, hasn't it, than how it's handled in the Premier League. And look, it's not, you know, I think every team can have grievances with VAR and, you know, how decisions are going and the length of time these things are taken. But it seems to be a breath of fresh air so far. And we'll come on to the matches, but just a general thought on VAR in the tournament. It seems to work a lot smoother.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is kind of the way that it should be running, really. They should be quick decisions. And when they introduced it, they said that it was only going to be for clear and obvious errors. Yeah. And clear and obvious errors only take a matter of, you know, 30 seconds to clear up. So, yeah, it's looking good. Like you say, England seems to be doing their own thing slightly differently. But I think it's sort of a progression, isn't it? So I think in a couple of years' time, we'll see it all running smoothly. Obviously, there were the initial concerns about it, you know, delaying play, messing with talking points and things like that. But I've always maintained that there should be sort of a cutoff point whereby, you know, if the event takes more than, say, 30 seconds, a minute to decide, right, is this on or offside, you just stick with your on-field decision. I don't know if that's something that they're putting into place in this tournament or around Europe, but they seem to be sticking to a sort of short time frame to be making these decisions, and it's really helping with the flow of the game.
I think they're using the Dutch model for offside, which I think helps. So Dutch model is, it sounds laughing. I've seen it panned already because England are going to introduce it now. It's called the thicker line. But basically, yeah, it's quite a thick line. So as we understand it, level is a thing then. So if you're level or you're like, your armpit's offside, you'll still get the goal. Yeah, so, you know, but also makes it a bit easier. So if you are offside, then it's probably something like when you see the replay, you see someone's head of play, you go, oh, yeah, okay, you can see that's off. It's not actually that tight. So it does at least give you then the levels a thing again, which is probably the thing that's wound everybody up more than anything else.
You're right, because the concept of level has just been completely eradicated from the game in the last couple of years. I remember reading somewhere that they use a line in the Premier League, they use a line that's one pixel thin. So how are you ever going to have a sort of dubious call as to whether he's level or not? You know, everything has to be debated over. So
it's madness. But look, they seem to be doing it a lot quicker, a lot smoother in this tournament, which is good to see. So Gareth, I'm gonna come to you now for a sec. We're gonna start on Group A. So the first game of the tournament, we had Italy against Turkey. Did you watch that game,
Keith? So I came away from it so impressed with Italy, so on all of them. I know Chris touched on it in regard of the different way they play, but I just thought the variation, when I said this in the group the other night, I was getting a bit of stick off someone. But anyway, you know, you're used to Italian fullbacks. You're not used to bombing on and bombing past wingers at time. I just thought their variation, the way they were coming inside the centre mid, invert is the posh word we like to use these days. So let's go with that. Coming in and doubling up as midfielders, I just thought they were absolutely excellent to watch. Everything about them. It was the first time in years of, you know, I know Keith, you're big for, you know, defensive you and you know, all that sort of stuff defensively, and also the way you like things. You're a big fan of Italian football, and you have been for years. But we just thought the other night it was just so different, Keith. It was current, But everything was done right. Your forwards dropping deep. It was really, really enjoyable to watch. It was like watching, you know, the like a Pep side, if you want to call it that. It was just so different. I was in awe of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was different, wasn't it, than what you're typically looking at in Italian teams, and especially at the start of a tournament. Italy usually, to say they sort of ease themselves into tournaments would be an understatement. They usually, you know, draw a defeat and they'll try and just get it back after that. But this was different. It was a good, good team. Connor, I'll come back to you. What did you make of the Italians, or what did you make of the Turkish in the game? Was it one was really good or one was really bad?
Yeah, I thought it's a sort of tale of two halves, really. I think, you know, in the opener, it's always going to be a little bit cagey to begin with. And the first half was certainly like that. There were a couple of chances either side, but I thought Turkey were pretty shocking first half and second half. And then Italy sort of grew into the game. They looked impressive, I think, with the two deeper midfielders, Jorginho and Locatelli, they looked very good. Yeah. Locatelli had to grow into the game a little bit, but once they sort of got that foothold in the second half, there was no way that they were letting slip on that one. But Turkey were probably my biggest surprise of the tournament so far in a negative way. I thought they were absolutely shocking. I think looking at their team, they've got a solid core. They've got some good players in there, and they really, really underperformed in the first day.
Yeah, they were. A lot of people had high expectations of Turkey going into it. And with some of the names that are in there, I think you'd probably have expected a more solid performance from them. You know, maybe in the, you know, Burak Yilmaz is 37, I think, in the attack, or 36. You know, you're not going to get long busting runs, but from the defensive unit, Demiral and Soyuncu, you're expecting a bit of solidity there. But look, Chris, it was good by the Italians. Did anyone stand out for you in that game, or was it just a good team performance?
I think, to me, it was a good team performance. Being you and me were having a chat about the game. And as usual, I put the curse on saying, I don't fancy him overly much. I think he's overhyped and he scores. I was like, oh. I mean, the most spectacular thing was the own goal. It's the funniest own goal I've seen. It was brilliant. But no, overall, I just thought they were solid. One thing I did like about them, though, is as much as that's the most attacking I've seen Italy, they've still got the Italian defensive units. That, you know, right at the end, Chiellini's throwing in the tackles that Chiellini's known for, and the high five at each other like they've scored a goal, which is still very Italian. Yeah. That's what we know for the Italians. But they've now got themselves a bit of a nice balance where when they go forward, you know, Insigne, you're sort of going, you know, Insigne's a great player. I'm surprised he's probably not moved on to someone slightly bigger. You know, don't respect the Napoli, but I'm surprised when the bigger clubs haven't tried for him, because he's just that kind of clever, cute player that you need, and probably not one that Italy have used very well, probably since the likes of Del Piero and Totti.
Yeah, true. It's probably a different approach, isn't it, that they've gone with over the years. But Connor touched on it there. I think Jorginho and Locatelli in midfield really did look a solid base. And when you have Barella in there as well, joining in with attacks, you know, usually the Italian midfield, they're usually more functional and workmanlike. And this had a nice mix, a nice blend of workmanlike sitting in front of a the Chiellini Benucci partnership, which, look, I don't care how old they are, the two of them could be 46 and 44 playing, and they're still going to dive into tackles, and they're still going to put their face on the line. I mean,
that'll be my only worry, Keith, if they continue to play like that, is Georgie. Now, I know Locatelli sort of played a bit higher at times, but that sort of triangle of Jorginho, Chiellini and Benucci against much faster players and much more dynamic lads on the ball, you know, tippy-tappy football, playing triangles around them. That'll be my only worry, will be them three when they come up against the better sides that people do play around them. So we'll see how good if Italy sit back as a back four then. It'd be very, very interesting to see.
Well, Connor, they do. Have, Chelsea. Oh, go ahead, Connor.
No, I was just going to say they do have Verratti to come back in. I don't know. Do you guys know what's the case with his injury? Whether he'll be back sort of in within the group stages or latter stages of the tournament or what? Because it'd be interesting to see where he slots in.
I heard two games. I think someone said that in the group the other day, Keith, didn't they? He was gone for the first two games, Connor.
But they've also got Cristante who comes in there, and he is very highly rated, and he will be one that comes in now. But Connor, as a Chelsea fan, Gar touched on that triumvirate of Bonucci, Chiellini and Jorginho. And, you know, as a Chelsea fan, you'd see a lot more of Jorginho than we will. I'm a big fan, I'm not going to lie. I think he's an excellent player. I think he's unfairly criticised a lot of the time in the press. but I don't watch him all the time. As a Chelsea fan, what the, how do you rate him? Do you think he's sort of underrated, or is he the sort of accident prone, error prone player that some pundits make him out to be?
I think he's a very polarizing player, and that's because he's got massive deficiencies, but he's also got huge strengths to his game. Yeah. He's incredible under pressure. He's got a good way to pass, and that sort of short tiki-taka type passing. He's very good at that. His passing range isn't too strong, really. He tends to under-hit the ball quite a lot, but his main deficiencies are really in an athletic sense. Yeah. So sort of if you've got quite an open, expansive system where you've got attackers making runs at him and runs either side of him, he can be exposed quite easily. And that's why we saw that sort of thing from Lampard's system. Whereas under Tuchel, especially in the Champions League, he's looked incredible. Next to Kante, who can sort of push forward and roam a little bit more, which I think that's the role that Verratti or Barella will play when they're next to him in the Italy side. It gives him license to be a bit more compact, have his own zone, and that really plays to his strengths rather than highlighting those athletic deficiencies that he's definitely got.
Yeah, indeed. He's a good player, I have to say. I'm a big fan. Avi's thrown in a super chat. Nice one, Avi. My man, walking away, lads, but wanted to see my little bro Connor make his debut. Love you, mate. I assume he's saying he loves me, but it could be you, Connor. So, look, just
it's definitely not me.
It's definitely not you. No, it's definitely not you. But nice one, Avi. Good to have you joining us, even if you are on the other side of the camera. But it's interesting, before what we're going to do, lads, we're not going to go in depth on every match, you know what I mean? We'll talk about them. And the reason I wanted to sort of spend a bit more time on this is Italy, to me, have been one of the most impressive teams of the fourth round. I've been really impressed with them. And the thing, again, on Jorginho, sitting in that deepest sort of role, with the way Italy are lining up, they've got two midfield players playing fullback. Well, converted midfield players in Florenzi and Spinazzola. And they're not the type of fullbacks that are going to they're going to leave them exposed. So they'll always sort of have, with the Chiellini, Benucci, you'll always find that the fullbacks will still be back down a shift, even though they're both midfield players that have converted. They're excellent sort of fullback options in that system. Do you know what I mean? They're not, you know, a winger that goes back to play fullback and they're constantly boom, 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 up forward and not getting back. So I think they might be okay with the Jorginho, with that triangle, once they're not isolated with them. And I just think with the fitness of Spinazzola and Florenzi, I think they can be all right there. But yeah, I have to say, really enjoyed it. And a strong bench as well, because as you said, Verratti still to come back in there. They had Chiesa, who a lot of people thought would start for them, and didn't. They went with Berardi, and he was good. Do you know what I mean? Chris was saying he had an argument about Immobile. Immobile done well. Look, it's a dangerous Italian team.
Tufan and people were trying to get around Yilmaz a bit more, and Calhanoglu or whatever you want to call him from Milan.
Calhanoglu.
People have been, I think I've heard seven different pronunciations of his name, so there you go. I think when they all came in and there was three players trying to walk off Yilmaz at times, the two fullbacks, Florenzi until he went off, and Spinazzola had come in, saw it. So it was almost three defensive midfielders at times with the two centre-halves right behind them. So that in itself will get Jorginho, if they continue to play like that without the ball, that in itself will get Jorginho well overhaul physically by a mile. So it really impressed me without the ball that way the other night when I did say they were inverting a bit. That could be to Jorginho's strengths that they keep doing that if they employ that tactic all the way through.
Indeed. O'Shea McGlinchey has a comment up there. Who's the alarm going off in the background? That's me, O'Shea. Nothing I can do. It's someone's car alarm. Do you know what I mean? So, unfortunately, I've no...
have a word, Keith. Come on.
No control over who that is. I'm just hoping it'll go off soon enough. I'll try and mute myself when I'm not talking, just to make it a bit more sort of easy on the listeners. But that's hands up. It is. It's somewhere in Dublin City that's going bleeding mad. But, Italy... I enjoyed them. Do you know what I mean? I think they looked good. Turkey, not so much, but we'll come back to them. The other game in that group was Wales and Switzerland. I'm not going to talk too much about that. It wasn't a great game, in fairness, unless anyone has any standout comments on that one.
I thought Danny Ward did well. For a lad who's never played in the Premier League and was Liverpool's number one for 6 days, I thought. To be fair to him, I thought he did quite well.
Yeah. But I suppose the Liverpool link again, Shaqiri at international level is, you know, he's such a good, good player. And Liverpool just haven't seen enough of him with the fitness issues. But when he goes to tournaments, he is the main man for Switzerland. And, you know, he's where he plays and he gets the freedom of the team to sort of to run their attacks. Very, very good player. Gets an assist. Yeah, Nico Williams, was he involved as well? We had a few
contingents. Nico didn't start, I don't think. I'm not sure if he came on at all. Unusually, because he's been left back at all the
he didn't get on.
But he's been left back in all the friendly, so I think everyone thought he was going to start, to be fair.
Yeah, indeed. But look, we'll move on from that. The next group is Group B. I don't want to talk about Denmark and Finland, lads. We've, you know, everybody's spoken about that. It's been
some of the fallout after it's a bit unsavory, I would say.
It is. Do you know what? We'll spend a little minute talking about it. It's quite harsh. And the Finnish, Finland scored a goal. It's their first major tournament. They scored a goal and it was just no celebrating. The fans went mad, like, fair enough, but the players just knew it wasn't right.
We saw with Simon Kjær, was it, who, you know, let's face it, has saved his teammate's life. And coach came out and said later, they took him off after 5 minutes and said, the poor fella couldn't cope.
Yeah.
You know, which says it all, really. And now it's coming out that UEFA said to him, well, you play tonight or you play tomorrow or you forfeit the game.
Yeah,
that's not quite the player saying, oh, we'll go for it. And it was spun as Eriksen said, you know, play on for me. Which, look, that may have happened. But when you're told it's play tonight, play tomorrow, or you deduct, or basically you forfeit the game, it's kind of, it's not really a choice. It's kind of forcing you to make a decision with, but painting it in a certain way, which is wrong, really. Because, you know, those guys, to be honest, you know, nothing but praise for Denmark players, the medical staff, you know, how they protected the teammates, how they surrounded him. So, because for some reason, an idiot with a camera can't decide to pan to the crowd, which I know was a shocking thing that happened to Eriksen. You don't expect to see it, but there's got to be things in place. I'm sure, you know, if the streaker runs on the pitch, they pan to the crowd. If there's a bad leg break, you pan to the crowd so you don't see it. So when it's clear the guy's getting quite serious medically, pan to the crowd or flick it back to the studios. You know, I know the BBC took a lot of stick for it, but in fairness, they have no control over when it's flicked back to them, I don't think. I think it's the local broadcast. So that was a bit unsavoury. But, you know, I actually thought, you know, Simon Kjær, is it? I was
pressing it. Yeah.
Him, Peter Schmeichel, Kasper Schmeichel, who, you know, always comes across very, very well and is a leader in these sort of situations, came across. And look, Denmark, you know, I thought handled a horrific situation fairly well. And look, as for Finland, they were in a no-win situation, really, where they, you know, they win the game, but it's really the talking point. And it probably feels a little bit hollow, which, you know, can't be helped, unfortunately.
Indeed, and they have to go into other games, you know, they're going to have to play their other group games. Right, Christian Eriksen has, you know, he's not recovered, but he's doing well. But still, the trauma of going through something like that is going to play on the players' minds, unfortunately, for the rest of the tournament. But look, the other game in the group, Belgium and Russia, 3-0 to Belgium. I think we can all agree that Belgium are not on the steroids. Russia are not on the steroids for this tournament. They were atrocious.
Yeah, it was more overloads of paracetamol, I think.
Yeah, it was... They were poor. Connor, what did you make of Russia and Belgium? Belgium are one of the favourites.
Yeah, as you say, Russia were poor and there's not really much you can say other than that. Belgium looked, you know, exceptional, capitalised on Russia being absolutely, you know, awful. You got someone like Lukaku up front who is in the form of his life. It looks like Conte sort of reinvented him as a player, not that he was ever a poor player. I just feel like when he was at United, they didn't really play to his strengths that much. He was sort of used as a target man when he's always been a channel runner and a clinical finisher. And he showed that again in this game. I think Belgium really know how to play to his strengths and he's really turned into sort of a talisman and a leader in that side. And, you know, it's scary to think that they've got De Bruyne and Hazard. Well, I say Hazard. He's not really in the form of his life, is he? As much as it saddens me to say it.
He's in the eating form of his life.
More has been at the moment.
That's a good one. But yeah, I know he's had some dodgy seasons, but it looks like injuries have started to catch up with him. Yeah. But as a unit, this Belgium team probably look as strong as they have done. I know they came close in 2018. Maybe they just needed that little bit more maturity and they're sort of leaders in the team, like Lukaku. Players like Tielemans have come into their own this season. Courtois has taken his game up another level, and that's the sort of core that you need to win in these international tournaments. I think they've got that pragmatic style that you need. They can sit back, they can absorb pressure, not that they needed to against Russia. But I think, yeah, they've got all the tools to go very far in this tournament for sure.
I was surprised Yuri Zhirkov still played.
I
generally thought he'd retired, and then they said he's only played 70 minutes all season. I'm like, why are you starting him? And he lasted 30 minutes. God's a god.
Yeah. That's one of the best things about these international tournaments, isn't it? Seeing these old boys coming out of the woodwork. You know, you got Seb Larsson playing yesterday for Sweden.
Goran Pandev. Seb
Larsson still looks like fit though.
Yeah.
I felt sorry for Yuri Zhirkov. You know, you've got like Lukaku running, you've only played 70 minutes all season. It's not a barrel after that for him, is it?
Very true. Now, one thing, Gareth, I'll come to you on this, right? Connor spoke about Belgium there. They've got some good players. I think they're one of the most overrated teams in world football, in the sense that they're the number one team in the world, right? And I think, and I don't know if I'm being harsh because I don't rate Roberto Martinez, but I'm looking at the team and they have got Lukaku and they have got Tielemans. Courtois okay, but they've still got a Dedric Boyata in there. Castagna's a decent player.
He won't be playing again after that injury.
I don't think so. Mounier comes in, does okay. He's an okay player. Alderweireld and Vertonghen are still there. They're not the players they were. Yuri Tielemans is an excellent player. Carrasco, Mertens, they're all good. But for the number one team in the world, I think they're a bit overrated. Where do you rate this Belgian team after that game? Lukaku, excellent. And to have that outlet for a goal scorer really is brilliant. But as a team, what do you rate? How do you rate the Belgians?
I think you have to take the opposition into a lot of consideration here, lads. That Russia side was really, really poor. I think Lukaku just, you know, came into his own as he has been all season. His form has continued. He was a handful, and he was bound to be a handful for a Russian defence. I think Keith, you're bang on. I think they get found out with Boyata, Alderweireld, and Vertonghen at the back. There's a mistake in each of them all day long. Thorgan Hazard's playing as a wing back, isn't he? He's been doing well for the last couple of seasons. Then Donker worries me at times. I think he's very slow at times. If they're going to rely on everything to go through Tielemans, I'd be quite worried because he's not on either side of them. As you say, there's good players, but I just think after seeing what Italy can do as a unit and good players being made look a hell of a lot better, to me, I just don't think... Listen, I'll probably get poised on this, but I just don't think Belgium do anything in this.
The international Leicester City. They're pretty. Yeah. They get there about like quarterfinals, semi, maybe semifinals, but you never quite believe they're going to fully go all the way to it. That's how I feel about them.
Yeah, and a lot of Leicester influence there as well, I suppose, in the team. But look, it's not to dig them out. I think when you go into a major tournament, if you have a goal scorer, you have always a chance. And I think they have got, in Lukaku, I think they have an absolute threat that you can't give goals up to, like the Russians did. They gave them, you know, easy goals to score to get them on the way. And De Bruyne is still to come back, isn't he? He's in the squad still, and he's back fit now. He's playing with the same injury that Castagna got. Obviously, it's a couple of weeks since he got it, a couple of weeks of recovery. But he's going to be playing with a mask and all on that. And the only thing I would say is the mindset of Finland and Denmark, I don't think it's going to be a rough and, you know, there's not going to be much roughhousing. So maybe they can ease their way into the tournament and get through the group phase as is expected and see where they stand then. But it'll be interesting. Like I said, it's not that I don't rate them. It's just for the number one team in the world, I don't think they're that good. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. The next thing now we'll move on to is Group C. Austria, North Macedonia, Chris, Goran Pandev.
We had some fun with Chris, didn't we, with that?
We did. For anyone that doesn't know, and Connor, you won't be aware of this, we done a draft show. We do a lot of drafts on the pod, and we try and do a bit, make them a bit mad. And we done one before where it was pick a Champions League winner, but they have to be, you know, you can only have one or two nationalities repeated over the four teams. So we'd all take a turn and pick a player. And Grizz got his, you got drawn a number, and Grizz's second pick was a forward. So you could pick any forward who won the Champions League, and Grizz picked Goran Pandev. And it was the second forward out of the whole thing gone. And he went for Goran Pandev. He shit himself. He went for Diego Melito, I think. And he'd already, Argentina were gone. And then he panicked and went for Goran Pandev. He just had Inter, that Inter team in his head, and went for Pandev. And we give him so much stick. But then Pandev shows up. And Chris, it's North Macedonia. It's a bit of a fairy tale stuff, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, they went 1-0 down. I mean, give Austria some credit. That the forget that it's North Macedonia. That first Austrian goal is technically brilliant. The cross, the touch, you know, to control that. That's not an easy finish, and that would beat most keepers. So take out the fact it's North Macedonia. That's a great finish. Look, their goal, it is a bit of a balls up by the keeper, like. But look. Yeah. Their oldest player, you know, the probably the only North Macedonian that most people know, with probably except from apart from the left back from Leeds, so
Alioski.
So to be fair, you know, when he scored, he's like, oh, that's kind of the fairy tale, and it just looked for a while they were going to hold out to get a draw. You know, Austria's class told them with Alaba doing his Andy Robertson impression with a wonder cross to set up, but in fairness to North Macedonia. At 1-1 and at 2-1, they did have the chances. And what I quite like is they've gone, this is our first tournament, but we'll have a go. Yeah, they're still defensive, but they still had a go. Whereas Turkey, who were quite an experienced side, were quite cowardly approaches. And I was a bit like, at least both Macedonia and Finland have got the idea, which is we will sit deep, but we're going to have a go. It's a bit like, if we're going to lose, we'll lose fighting. And, you know, it was quite good to see, actually, because I actually flicked this game on thinking, poor ITV, what a first game. This will be shit. And to be fair, I was watching going, this is actually one of the more entertaining games I've watched. It was actually quite good fun. And I love watching a team where half the players are going, I have no idea who these guys are. So it's actually quite refreshing watching players going, I don't know who they are. This is actually quite good fun.
Yeah, that's true. Barry Devaney says, you know, Elmas will be a cracking player for North Macedonia. He's a player that you know, he's a good player, and he's playing at a nice level. Be interesting to see how he develops. But Connor, I'll come to you. Did you see this game, the Macedonia goal, Pandev? Did you think it was a foul on the keeper, or was it poor goalkeeping? And can you always judge by the reaction of players? There wasn't much of an argument.
Yeah, you're right. Nothing at all. And I don't think there's anything in it, really. I think nowadays keepers are a little bit too protected when it comes to fouls within the box. You know, you see those ones at the corner, any slight touch on their back and the keeper goes down, parries the ball. Even if he fumbles it without a touch, it's typically given as a free kick. I don't see any foul in there. I think when you're a keeper and you're coming out for a ball in a 50-50, you got to be assertive, don't you? And he fumbled it straight to Pandev. Popped it in the back of the net, and yeah, good goal for me. If they'd ruled that one out, there would have been uproar, wouldn't they?
Yeah, true. Gareth, I mean, I was watching it on RTE over here in Ireland, and Liam Brady was adamant that there was a foul, and he was quite incredulous that Ray Houghton didn't agree, you know. So it didn't look, as I said there, if there's no reaction by the keeper or by Alaba, I think it was Alaba, was it, that was in the mix, you know, neither of them are shouting for a foul, and I think that says all you need to know.
I think Connor's just being bang on there. The keeper needs to calm. The keeper needs to be more authoritative. End of story. I think our local media are just trying to have a little row on together to make it look interesting. But no, it was poor goalkeeping. End of story. And as you said, the reactions of others around the situation told everything. We know a few people have commented, but lads, I tell you what, I really like that Sabitzer lad. Very, very, very good player. Yeah. I heard rumors he's gone for 30 million or something in the
15
summer.
Million.
15 million, is it?
Spurs have been
after him for a while.
I think. Absolute bargain. The fella is excellent. Technically, he's busy. He can knock a ball around. Really, really impressive. For 15 million, Jesus Christ, I'll be snapping the hands off him.
That's the rumored figure, he's saying, 15 million euros. So, I mean, if that's the case and he's available for that, you know, I mean, you think you'd be all over it.
Is there a contractual thing there? Has he only got sort of a year left or something?
I think that's what it is. I think he's going into his last year, and I think it's a case of, you know, you'll get him for a smaller fee for that. And he won't be short of suitors. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Austria, I think Macedonia played well, and I think Macedonia, you know, they had a go, as Chris said. But Austria, they got the win, maybe not the most convincing, but they scored some good goals, you know, and it'll be interesting to see how they go. They'll be a dangerous enough team as the tournament goes on. But we'll move on to the other game in the group, and a lot of people were excited by this one. It was Holland against the Ukraine. And Chris, make of this? Did you go
I love this. I love this game. I enjoy it. I mean, I always have a soft spot for the Dutch anyway, so I quite enjoy watching the Dutch play. So, I mean, at half-time when it was 0-0, I think I was next to people said, this is just like watching Liverpool this year. It's everything but the goal, because they were doing everything but score. Gino Wijnaldum in the number 10 role, pretty much. You just look at what could have been with him at times, because it shows how intelligent a player Gino was. You know, he could play holding midfield for us and then play 10 for Holland, and is brilliant. So, you know, I was made up when Gino got the opening goal. It's a cracker of an opening goal. And it was entertaining. And then... what you didn't expect was Ukraine woke up. I got two very quick goals back, and it was end to end. And then obviously the right wing back, Dumfries, who looked, I'm not sure what who he plays up, but he looked impressive getting his first international goal. I believe he's been linked to the blue side of Liverpool, probably not for much longer. But you know, I've seen that rumor flying around. But yeah, no, I would probably say that's been the most entertaining game, because it was just mad. And I would say, whenever the Dutch are on now, let's just watch the Dutch, because quite frankly, it's just going to be like watching Liverpool 13-14. They can't defend, but they'll score loads of goals, and they'll just be really good fun.
Indeed. Connor, I think you have a fan there in the chat.
yeah, you should scratch your head or something like that, or do some sort of, yeah!
There we go.
But Connor, I'll stay with you. The Dutch team that went, they race into a 2-0 lead. It looked like total control for them. And they just sort of gave it back. They gave the onus and the initiative back to the Ukraine, didn't they? What did you make of the Ukrainian performance?
Well, I think Ukraine have got some good players, but I don't think their team is quite balanced enough, really, for them to put up a fight against any of the big boys. I mean, Malinovsky, I think he's a quality player, and I think lots of teams... Oh, I see a reaction there from Gar. Thoughts on Galinovsky then? Malinovsky.
He was a good player, wasn't he? He's 27, am I right? About 27 now, is he?
Yeah, 28, Malinovsky is, I think.
Yeah, but he's sort of coming to fruition later in his career, isn't he? But
yeah.
I'm a big, big, big Atlanta fan, Connor, so I do like him. Me and young Davo are Atlanta men, so now really, really good player. You know, picks up really good positions, good eye for a pass, and can score both foot as well. Looks at a shot from range as well. Really, really impressed me anytime I've seen him in for Atlanta, Connor. So, yeah, just hope he stands out a bit for the years. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that hammer of a left foot maybe may boost up his value a little bit. That's for sure. He can hit it from range. But yeah, I don't think they've got enough really. Ukraine to be threatening the bigger teams. They've got Yarmolenko, who seems like one of their main focal points, and I don't think he's really got enough about him anymore. I mean, their two goals, they were quality strikes. The first one was a ranger from Yarmolenko, and I can't remember the second. Was it a goalkeeping error or one from a free kick?
It was a header, wasn't it? Yarmolenko scored the second one.
Yarmolenko from a free kick, yeah. But I don't think they'll be any big threat to challenge. I think they'll struggle to get out of the group with Austria, really. But I think Netherlands. No, go ahead.
No, it's just with this new, you know, top three teams, the four best tour place teams. Do you know what I mean? Like, it'll be interesting to see if Ukraine can get out of there. You know, it'll be interesting to see. There's some absolute muppet in the chat there. Lads, if you see
leave them to it. There's a lot of good people in the chat there. Just leave them to it, or ban, or whatever you can do.
Yeah, get them out. Don't ban them for 5 minutes. Kick them out. But look, the Dutch, they got there in the end. Dumfries, yeah, it was, Chris, you mentioned Dumfries there a minute ago, and he had a good game at right back for them. He was finding a lot of space, missing a lot of chances, but, you know, he looked good down the right for them.
He did. He looked like the modern fullback, whether you're playing wing-back or fullback. You know, there'll be a lot of Premier League sides after him. I joked about the blue side is because I think they've been linked to him. I think the rumour is they were trying to get it done before the Euros, which hasn't happened. So I think their concern now is, with a performance like that, there will be a lot of clubs after him, which probably means it won't go under the radar then. So, look, he just looked really impressive. You know, he probably does need to work on his finishing and his composure, but, you know, I think he's only young. So, but what I saw about everything good went through him or went through Genie. So, you know, they're the two things to look forward to. But, yeah, I can't wait for the next Dutch game because I just think
his end product could be a bit better, especially when you got someone like Andy Carroll up front, a.k.a. Veghorst.
He's a unit, isn't he?
Ah, lads, did anyone notice? He just kept running into people. Goes around running into people. He's actually like that rock lad out of the Marvel films. He just goes running into people. Unbelievable. But listen, if you want to get the best out of him, you need to have good supply from the fullbacks. And I just think Dumfries didn't, for me, you know, with all that space he had, he just didn't do enough with his pause for a supply function to a.k.a. Andy Carroll, the Dutch Andy Carroll, Veghorst.
Connor, what did you make of Veghorst? Were you a fan or... not so much.
Yeah, I liked him. I liked him, and I think he'd be a useful player for any top team. Mm. I got shades of Giroud from him, even in the way he moved, the way he sort of carried his body, those sort of slightly uncomfortable touches from him. Maybe he almost looks like he shouldn't be a professional footballer, but he's effective, isn't he? He did a job, and he scored bags of goals for Wolfsburg this season. So
yeah,
I like the way they play with a big man, little man combination up front. I think Depay will do well this tournament. I think he'll score quite a few goals. But I do think they've got some big holes in their team. I don't think that midfield of De Roon, Wijnaldum and De Jong, on paper it looks all right. I don't think De Jong has enough about him yet to make a huge difference. I think when I'm looking at an international team and I'm assessing how far they're going to go in a tournament, I'm looking at how compact they are as a unit in defence. Don't know if they have that just yet. Do they have an elite creator? Who's the creative force in there? Is it Genie? Is it De Jong? Is it good enough? And do they have an elite scorer? Depay, you know, he's got a few goals, and Veghorst, they might get enough between them, but I just don't see them having enough, really.
Yeah, and Martin Stecklenburg in goal, don't know what that's all about. Like, he's leading terrible now, and the fact that he's playing is a bit of an issue. But look, it's a win. Hit the ground running and you get off and get your 3 points. But there's, to me, with this Dutch team, there's shades of the old Dutch teams where there's going to be sort of an implosion in the team. And I don't know if it's because Frank De Boer is the manager and Frank De Boer has previous for this. I don't know if there's that unity that's been in the Dutch squad for the last few years. Now, I could be wrong on that, and maybe it is, but for some reason, I just have this thing about them that they're going to make a balls of it, you know, as a team that are expected to do well.
Isn't this the longest he's been in the job as well?
Yeah. Yeah, he's not been he's not been doing well as of late. But look,
Big Verge is due to join them soon as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got
his Portuguese rehab. So I'm sure he'll knock a few heads together, a bit of leadership in there will be good for him. So,
you know, it's good to do that. It's good that they can... they can bring a player like Van Dijk in there and give that, right, he can't play, but he's a calming influence and he has got leadership quality. So it makes sense to bring somebody in like that. But look, we'll see what happens. Maybe I'm wrong. I like Holland. I like when they're on form, they're a good team. I don't know if it's the orange kit that does it, you know what I mean? It's like Brazil in the yellows, you know, you get a nice vibrant Holland in the orange. I'm a big fan of that sort of nonsense. But speaking of England, we move on to Group D. Connor, I'm going to start with you on this one. England against Croatia. We get accused a bit on this of sort of baiting England because look, we're not England fans. We're not English. Predominantly, we're not an English podcast. We're predominantly Irish. But, you know, as an Englishman, proudly wearing the colours there. What did you make of the game and the team selection? And, you know, a win is a win is a win. How did you find the performance and the team selection for England?
Like you mentioned, I mean, the most important thing is the win. You know, yeah. It's a Croatia team that have some good players in there. When I looked at their team on paper at first, I didn't realize how many quality players they've got in all sorts of positions. You know, across the back four, I know sort of you could look at Vida as quite a weak spot. Not too sure about the keeper, but they're a decent team. They've got excellent options in midfield. And they got, you know, I think Andre Kramaric up front is a dangerous player who can hurt any team. So I think, yeah, getting a win against them is the most important thing, and we did well to manage that. The team selection was questionable, but it turned out okay. I think playing with two holding midfielders is the way to go for England until we get to the latter stages of the tournament, when maybe I'd revert back to a back five. Trippier at left back was a questionable one. I don't really see the idea behind that one when you've got, you know, Luke Shaw, arguably best left back in the league this season. Chilwell looked very good, although I'd prefer him as a wing back. He's evolved his game to be suited to that wing back role now.
Well, it's funny you say that, right? Because, he maybe is more of a wing back. Luke Shaw probably better as a wing back. But they're both left fulls. They're both left footed fullbacks, you know, by their nature. Surely they're a better option than a right footed player. Now, Trippier wasn't bad, but he wasn't good. You know what I mean? He wasn't there. You have a right foot player playing on the left, they're constantly going to be cutting in. Whereas if you have Chilwell and Shaw, you're going to get quick delivery from the wide positions. It was a weird one. And with Reece James on the other side, did you feel he could have got a shout? I know he's mad for right backs and he does have a few of them, but did he get the fullbacks wrong? Because Kyle Walker was atrocious.
Absolutely.
In my opinion. Absolute muck.
He wasn't even that good.
But the selection, and I know, sorry if I couldn't across you, lads, the selection is the thing that interested me, because Connor, you touched on it there. You look at that Croatia team and you see a midfield three of Kovacic, Brozovic and Modric, and you're thinking, right, they will dominate Declan Rice, Calvin Phillips and Mason Mount. They were so poor. You know, Croatia were so poor. And I mean, Declan Rice to me is a hugely overrated player. You may feel differently. I think he came through the ranks at Chelsea, didn't he? And they're linked with taking him back. I think he's a weak link there in that England team, personally. But they never bothered him. Croatia never got a sniff on them.
Yeah, and it's a matter of opinion, I suppose. But I looked at that midfield that we set up with and I thought, we've done him here. He's set up correctly in midfield. You know, Declan Rice, although he doesn't really contribute a huge amount in the build-up, we didn't really need that in that game. I think Gareth was looking to cancel out the midfield. He knew that their strengths were in that midfield of Brozovic, Kovacic and Modric. So he looked to cancel them out. I think Declan Rice covers ground really, really well. He's a dual winner. And with Phillips, playing a little bit more advanced, I think, you know, the two of them played him off the park. Declan Rice's deficiencies are probably when he's looking to contribute in the attacking phase. He wasn't needed to, and I don't think in this England setup he is needed to. I think Gareth got it pretty much spot on in the front six. I probably would have played maybe Grealish over Foden, but that's a much over muchness, really. Kane didn't look too strong. But I think with the midfield, I think he got it bang on.
I suppose his options were limited as well. You know, there's not, like, Henderson is injured, and Bellingham, while an exciting talent, is still, you know, he's only 17 years old, and you sort of bring him in and give him minutes here and there. But Chris, I understand, right, that Declan Rice will do a job, and Calvin Phillips I thought was excellent in there. Mason Mount, I'm a huge fan of Mason Mount. I think he's one of the best young players. I think he's sort of very underrated. I think Foden gets all the attention as the great sort of English hope. But I think Mount is a great player there. Is it something that you think that's the stall is set for England going forward in that midfield and attack? As Connor said, he was happy enough with that. Can you see any changes to that, or is that where they're going to go? Can you see, well, in fact, you know what, I'll throw it out to the whole team. Is it Walker, Trippier, as far as you're concerned? Is it, Mings and Stones, or where's Maguire at? Like, is that England's best team for this tournament, or will they be chopping and changing, in your opinion?
I think they'll be chopping and changing. I assume whenever they think Maguire's fit, Maguire will come in probably for Mings, who, to be fair, I think he did okay. Look, my thing with it, that game was it was an okay England performance. They kind of did it, got the win, which they haven't done in opening games in Euros ever before. But you are seeing a Croatia side that's definitely coming to the end of its cycle, and they don't look the side that knocked England out of the World Cup a couple of years ago. So, look, I thought Walk was atrocious, but I think he was there for his experience. I think Trippier was there because I think he wanted another free kick taker option other than just who he had, which is interesting because what was all the big fuss about Trent then? Because would you just put Trent left back then? You know, if it was me, maybe if Walker's four carries on the way it was in that first game, you'd probably put Trippier to right back, and then you'd put in one of Shaw or Chilwell at left back, which is much of a muchness. You know, they're both good players. Attacking wise, look, Kane always starts. We know that. I mean, I thought he was piss poor, to be honest, in the game, but, you know, he is what he is. I thought Sterling was lucky to start, and I thought, apart from the goal, I don't think he had a particularly effective game by his standards. But look, Sterling's record for England is very good. You know, he's just going through a bad form. Yeah. The fact you can't have Sancho on the bench is a little bit laughable. I know you have to have two keepers on the bench because they're the rules, but I'm just looking at that bench going, if in doubt, I've always said, if in doubt, stick another attacker on the bench. You know, Sancho's in the form of his career, you know, for Dortmund. And I think he's a little bit out of sight, out of mind. People forget because they don't watch German football. He's brilliant. And
sorry for cutting across, Luke, why would you put Sancho, not put Sancho on the bench, but put Saka? Well, Saka was on the bench, was he, for England? Like, why is it the durability? I mean, Saka can play fullback, but surely they've enough playing fullbacks.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And it's nothing against Saka. I like Saka, but I just think Sancho's a better player. And look, we won, which is fine, but I think it's a bit laughable that you can't find a way to get someone like a Grealish either in the side or off the bench. Yeah. It's just weird. And maybe it's, you know, the saviour of football, you know, Gary Neville was saying, you know, it's horses for courses, but, you know, this is the man who helped construct a loss to Iceland. So, you know, I'm not sure what he knows about international coaching, but if Grealish was another nationality, and it's not a dig at the Irish, if he played for France or he played for Germany, he played for Portugal, they would find a way to use someone like that, even off the bench. And I just find it a bit weird. Nothing against Foden. I thought Foden was excellent. I think after Phillips, I thought Foden was probably the most effective. He just has got something about him which makes you get excited, you know, and I can see why City fans are so excited by him. But yeah, I just think for England, we'll get out of the group. They may get to the last 16, they may get to quarters, but they'll get found out then. Because I just don't think we've got the strength and depth in defence, and I don't think we've got strength and depth in management.
Yeah, look, we've said it there. You know, you have to win your games, and that's the tricky game in the group, and they've got through it. So you can only build your momentum from there, and we'll see how it goes. I think, you know, they've one of the best squads there. It'll be just interesting to see how he manages to get through that. But the other game in that group, it's Scotland and the Czech Republic, Gar. We saw.
Can I have my England chat for a moment?
Oh, go on, yeah, go on. Have your England chat. Go on.
Come here. I think that a lot of people are giving the Trippier decision a bit of grief. For me, playing that right, so I thought Rebic is going to come in all the time on his right foot, lads. He's not going to go wide. He's going to come in solid all the time. If you play Shaw or someone fully left foot out there, they're going to touch the line there because, you know, they're attacking modern fullback. So Modric is going to look for Rebic all day long to come in solid and feed Kramaric a bit through his right foot, feed crosses, in-swing cross and stuff. So I have a feeling that's why that could have been the logistics of playing Trippier on that side to stop him cutting in all the time because he was tucked in a lot. For me, the front England front focus is built around Kane too much, to be honest with you. I think if you look, you could play Foden through the middle easily enough. Have you got Foden, Grealish and Sancho or someone in that? Look how dynamic it is, lads. They switch around more. You're not waiting for one focal point in regards to Kane. You've got lads who can switch and be dynamic and pop up everywhere, whereas Kane, You know, we all know what he's like. That's, he wants everything fed into him. It's, you know, he's the go-to man for Spurs, and he's, I am Harry Kane. So we all know his poses. He rates himself, and he is, don't get me wrong, he's a quality player, but I think England are restricted internationally having to play through him all the time with such fantastic different options up there. You know, if you ever have a ballsy manager, you could try something different, but unfortunately, Southgate is not that.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's true, but look, we'll give them their flowers. They got off to a good start. And I want to rattle through these other games. Scotland, you know, undone by look, I thought Sheik was excellent in that game, but the second goal, like, it's a great goal, right? It's a great goal because you look at the angles from it. He didn't just sort of hit it and hope, or if he did, put some bend on it. You know what I mean? He put some bend on it. But what was David Marshall doing? You know what I mean? Like, sort of so far out. If you're not the type of keeper who plays that high line, don't do it. Because he's scampering back, he's diving into the net. I don't know what he was hoping to achieve, just hit off him or something when he was doing that. But they were badly exposed, Scotland. And, you know, they put themselves into a bit of a sticky position now, Gar, haven't they, in the rest of that group?
Yeah, and as you say, really, really exposed. There was a lot of shouts from a lot of fans that certain players didn't play as well for them. For me, I don't know how that young lad off Southampton didn't start up for him. Jesus Christ on our mighty. If international is all about finishing and having finishers in, and he can do that. We've seen what he can do this season. But for me, everything went down. Everything good went down Scotland's left hand side. From Robbo, and you know the chat is blowing up here. Robbo, he was excellent. To be fair, and everything that came out of it was good. His crossing was quality, but there was just no one in there to finish at times. And some people looked off. A lot of people slate McTominay. I thought he was awful the other night, but he's had a good season at United, to be fair. And he's not bad. He's a box-to-box midfielder. He's got energy about him. He can score a goal too. But just there was a lot of things that just didn't add up about Marshall, which I thought was awful. You know, the fans are now asking for Mr. Chelsea to go in now. All TalkSport spoke about today was him starting, and there's a lot of hype for him to start. Billy Gilmore. He's excellent. Billy Gilmore. He's really, really good. Hasn't got a chance at Chelsea, to be fair. And listen, he's in amongst a quality squad. So let's be honest, your chances are going to be limited. Probably should have went on loan, but listen, now is the time. He's with Scotland. He should be given a start, in my opinion, next game.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I'd give you a shot on Billy Gilmore there, Connor, but I want to rattle through these other games, right? So, no, do you know what? Go on, you're a Chelsea fan. Fair, have a go, Billy Gilmore.
I could talk for hours, so you might have been right to cut me off there. But no, I think he does deserve a chance. You're right, Gar, in that McTominay didn't look good, but he has his uses as a player. Much like Rice, you know, he's a dual winner. He'll cover ground like nobody else. And when you're playing those big teams, no, when I'm playing against United, or when Chelsea are playing against United, McTominay is one of the players who scares me most, because he eats up the ground and he wins the ball back. And when you're playing against possession heavy teams, someone like that, you know, is a necessary tool to have in your squad. And I think someone like Gilmore playing a bit more advanced will really complement him quite well. Whether he plays that role or if he plays a six slightly deeper, I personally don't think he's a six. I don't think he's robust enough. I don't think he can cover the ground. Mm-hmm. But in a slightly more advanced eight role, he's a really creative passer and he can make opportunities. And that's what Scotland were lacking. You know, if their principal creator is Robbo on the left, you need something central.
Yep.
And, you know, Shea Adams is a good channel runner. And I think him and Gilmore could create well together. So I think, you know, I don't blame Clark for not picking him in the first game in their first major tournament in so long. He's only 19. So, you know, you can understand the decision. But I think in games moving forward, he would be wise to pick Billy and put him next to McTominay.
Yeah, indeed. So we'll move on quickly. Poland, Slovakia. I have Poland in the sweep for this. Disgusted. They let me down bad. 2-1, red card, nightmare, Slovakia, get out, terrible, terrible. Then Spain and Sweden, what are we going to
think? Oh, Jesus.
It's a good winner.
Yeah,
it was a good winner, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was nice, you know. Good. Slovakia aren't a bad team, you know. They've got good players there. But look, Poland let me down. Spain, Sweden, lads, nil all. They're breaking records for the bleeding amount of passes they have. It was terrible.
I couldn't tell you about the first half because I fell asleep. That's how good it was. Possession football's all great, but it's got to have some purpose. It was dull. And Morata does what Morata does, which is get offside and miss sitters, which was quite funny, really.
Yeah, Connor, you've had Morata there. He's a bit of an enigma, isn't he? Like, he goes to all these big clubs, he gets all these big moves, but he doesn't look like he has the required quality for the top level.
It's incredible. His agent, I mean, you know, he's doing a bloody good job, isn't he? Juventus, Atletico, Real, Chelsea. It's obscene because he's not looked like a starting quality striker at any of those clubs. You know, he's got good characteristics in his game. He's good aerially. He can play as a target man and link up quite well. But Jesus Christ, his clinicality is non-existent. Now, you see all those debates about Morata or Werner, two peas in a pod, aren't they?
Yeah.
He's a good number two striker. His best sign was at Madrid, but that's when he was coming off the bench for the last half hours or in cup games. That's kind of what he was good for. I think he's believed his own height that he's a starter, because whenever he started, he's looked crap.
Him and Chuba Moutang definitely have the same age. Oh, they definitely have the same age.
I mean, fair play to him. He's gone from Stoke to PSG to Bayern. I mean, that's some agent. Cool, that is brilliant. Yeah. You know, fair play to him.
You know, hands up. Well done to the agents. That's their section on this. Well, lads, I want to quickly move off that game because it was quite dull. It was terrible. The last group, the group of death. Hungary and Portugal. I watched this earlier. Hungary were very unlucky because Portugal run out 3-0 winners. Yeah. And, you know, it was a bit flattering, really, that they got three goals so late on. But, Gar, I'll come to you. Ronaldo, I mean, I thought he was poisoning the game.
Ridiculous. So those times I had to look and see, was he still there? It just shows you the quality of the man. Steps up. Billy Big Bollocks, he might have to bleep that out tomorrow, but however, and takes the penal, you know, all day long. He'll eat that off you. But I have to say, Keith, the tour goal for me is absolute breathtaking. Little triangles from the right hand side, played around. Hungary couldn't get near them. On the third play
at that stage.
They were out on their feet. You could see it. Brilliant goal. Lovely football. Something you'd expect more from Spain, but however, we wipe that one off the board. Really good goal, but Ronaldo is just world class, let's be honest, lads.
Yeah, that bleeding alarm has gone off again. Connor, Ronaldo, he's the difference than a Morata, isn't he? As Gar said, Spain are doing that sort of move all the time, but they've no one to put it in the net, whereas Portugal have Ronaldo, and that's just the difference.
Yeah, I mean, the only word you can use to describe him is inevitable, really. Yeah. You know, he didn't look too brilliant throughout the game, but then he pops up. You know, he did miss that chance early on in the first half, towards half time, I think, in the first half. But then, you're right, God, that final goal, that little link up was amazing, the way he takes around the keeper. It's just Ronaldo, isn't it? And he just doesn't seem to age. I don't know how old he is now. What is he, 34, 35?
46, I think.
36 and still doing that, still performing at that level. It's just exceptional. I think with Ronaldo, you've clearly got that sort of pressure within the Portugal camp to feed him at all costs. And the players, it seems like they're sort of rising to that rather than wilting, which can only be a good thing for the team.
Yeah.
Indeed, it's looking promising. But then we went on, Portugal done well. Jota wasn't great, I didn't think, in the game, to be honest. He didn't have a great game. But they've a good squad there, and they've players that can come in and step in and do that business when it doesn't work out for one of their players. But the last game then of the group, of the first round of matches, was France and Germany. Chris, anyone, what did you make of that? Was there anyone that stood out for you? Was France worthy of the win?
They were. They took the lead through another funny own goal, which is, it seems to be a theme of the tournament so far. In fairness to France, they just defended really well. Germany, if they had a clinical striker, not Timo Werner or whoever else they had up front. They might have given France more trouble, but on the break, France were just scary. I mean, Mbappe started at one point on the counter-attack about 8 yards behind Hummels and ended up 5 yards ahead of him in about 2 seconds. I mean, first to Hummels, he gets a good tackling, actually, to stop it. But, I know some of our parish think it's a penalty, but it's like, I love tackles like that where it's just from behind, where he does get a bit of the ball and it doesn't really endanger the player. But yeah, Mbappe at times, he was funny because at times he was quite defensive and doing the donkey work. But then when he got going, like, he was just ridiculous. I mean, the thing with Germany, the tactics were a bit odd because Kimmich wide right, his best work generally lately has been in the middle. Kroos and Gundogan in the middle. It's not quite a natural shield there. You probably want those three as a three, but they seem to flick to this three at the back. I think it's to protect the centre-backs they've got. But it didn't quite work. And Germany seems to lack a cutting edge. I mean, I've got Germany in the sweep, but you can never write Germany off because you know what they're like. Every time you write them off, they end up in the semi-final somewhere. But it'll be interesting what happens with our friend, Mr. Rudiger, who seemed to be taking a book out of Suarez's book and having a nibble. Seemed to look like he tried to have a nibble of Pompa's shoulder. Now, Pompa didn't really flinch much, so I don't know if he did or he didn't, but from the images, it looked like he tried to have a little bit of a bite of him, which I'm surprised wasn't brought up and no one really talked about it. But the other highlight of the game was the commentary. You know, it was Clive Tilsley and Ali McCoist, which to me is the best two combo for commentators. Clive Tilsley is just genius, and Ali McCoist has got that enthusiasm you need for a co-commentator. And in fairness to him, when he gets a call wrong, he calls himself out on it. Because I think one of the Hernandez went down and he said, "Oh, get up." He's not touching. They showed the replay. He actually got a kick in the face, accidental. And in fairness to him, McCoist said, "Oh, I got that wrong." He said, "Yeah, he's took a kick there." So he goes, "I'm sure that hurts." He said, "It's not deliberate." But I thought, well, most don't do that. Most just gloss over it. So that's also what made the game exciting was there were pundits on there that you like. I mean, the other person who's been really good on ITV has been Emma Hayes, the Chelsea women's manager, who, this is a rare thing for male pundits to learn, is actually gave some tactical insight that you wouldn't hear in the pub. And you were going and explaining why Hungary were doing so well, or explaining why certain teams were playing the way they were. It was actual tactical insight without being overkill, which is actually quite refreshing, which you don't hear enough of, rather than just having Jamie Redknapp or Jermaine Jenner say, "Oh yeah, but they want it more." You know what I mean? I could say that, but I don't get paid to do it. You know, I'm just some biff on a YouTube channel. You know, I'm not a paid professional. So I think Emma Hayes has actually put a few pundits to shame, really.
Yeah. Right, we won't keep us much longer, lads. We're going over the hour mark. So I just want to get off you. Who has been the player who's impressed you most in the first round of matches? And who are you looking forward to seeing progressing? So it might be the same player or it might be someone else that you're looking forward to growing into the tournament. So, Chris, we'll start with you. Who's impressed you the most in the first games and who are you looking forward to seeing in the rest of the tournament?
I'm looking forward to seeing Holland the rest of the tournament. Come back to me in a player. I'm trying to think of a player.
No, do you want an answer now?
The only two got me head is Wijnaldum and Mbappe. They're the two that have impressed me, but they're quite obvious answers.
Well, look, they can be the obvious answer. You know, it doesn't have to be the hipster's choice here. You can you can have the obvious one if that's the case. But look, Mbappe,
I've got a goalfish brain. They're the only two games I can think of because they're the two games I've enjoyed.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Connor, what about yourself? Who has been the player that impressed you most, and who are you looking forward to seeing for the rest of the tournament?
Mm-hmm. Well, like Chris, I'm going to have to go for a couple of obvious picks, really. And maybe you're right, because it's because they're fresh in my mind. A couple of French players, I thought Pogba looked incredible today. You know, it shows the difference when you're playing with teammates that you enjoy playing with in a setup that you want to play in. He looked brilliant and a completely different player to his United self. And then Mbappe as well. I mean, we all know what to expect. So maybe it didn't impress me because we all know what he's like as a player. But some of those touches, that offside goal was just sensational, wasn't it? That's the type of goal that you just forget about offside. Doesn't matter. Let it stand. And then Lukaku as well. So they're my three, Pogba, Mbappe and Lukaku.
Good stuff, good stuff. And Gar, what about yourself?
Keito, Locatelli, Berardi and... you know, I'm a big, big favourite a big favourite of mine, Calvin Phillips. Absolute baller. I've been shouting for this lad since his championship, since he was in the championship with Leeds. Absolute player, this guy, lads. you know, reminds me of Xavi Alonso. I know that's very, very high praise, but the kid can hit a ball 60 yards and put it on a play for someone. He controls the midfield. He's physical. He can get around the pitch. A big, big talent for me, and under a marvellous manager at Leeds, he's only going to get better. So, yeah, for me, Phillips, just for the way he just ran the game for England today.
Good choice. Yeah, look, it's been an interesting start. I won't keep his eye. I'm going to have to find out whose fucking car that is. Going to get down and bust her up and keep it going. I've been kept up all night. But look, guys, thanks very much for coming on and having a little chat about the first round of matches. We'll do it again as it goes on. It won't be as in-depth. It was just to get the first games done and dusted and get them out of the way. So, look, I want to thank Connor for coming on for the first time. Connor, thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Pleasure to be here.
We'll be getting you on more and more as the summer goes on. It was great to have your opinion. And we'll get you, when not just talking internationals, we get your Chelsea views as well coming on again. So, look, thanks very much for that. And Chris, I'm sure you're back on Friday, are you?
Yeah. How are we doing the road to Basel? Because I thought I'd just cheer everyone up.
Fucking Basel, nice one. All the ones we lose. We're doing the ones we lose.
Then we'll do the winners after that.
Yeah, exactly. And Gar, always a pleasure to have you on, my friend.
Thanks, pal. Always a pleasure to see you, pal. Connor, well done. Absolutely magnificent debut. Proper football, man. We'll forgive you for wearing the Union jersey, but hell no. Hey,
next time it'll be the Chelsea one. So,
keep dealing one on.
Could be worse. But now, listen, we'll be back.
Keith, get on the gap. Get him some trippers gear, will you?
yeah, indeed. We'll sort that out. But look, I know Jamie's on tomorrow for the midweek fix. I think there's a transferred agenda show on Thursday, and then Chris will be on Friday. So, plenty more shows to come during the week. But we'll leave it there for tonight. Thanks to the lads for joining me. And we'll see you again soon. Sports Social Podcast Network.